This is Fresh Air. If much of the world feeds these days on fast food, what Edward Baer writes about is slow food. Good, slow food. Food that takes time to find, to prepare, and to enjoy. Elegy for the Taste of Cream, The Pursuit of the Fundamental Loaf, and An Aged Country Ham. These are a few of the subjects he's delved into in his quarterly newsletter, The Art of Eating, in essays as lengthy and in-depth as a New Yorker profile. But he often follows his pieces with a recipe. For almost 5 years, Baer has been writing and illustrating his quarterly at his home in Peacham, Vermont. His wife, Grace, prints it in her shop a couple of towns over. It seems as though everyone these days is worried about how much fat and fiber is in the average American diet. But that's not Baer's concern.
I guess I'm not really writing for the nation. I mean, I think that what Julia Child did and does was to... She wanted everybody to eat better, I think, you know, whether as a moral mission or just as an approach. And I'm not maybe as optimistic as she. I don't think I can do much about that. And I think that at the very extreme end, and I don't mean the high end of price, but at the far end of the spectrum, which is, I guess, connoisseurship, though that's, you know, it starts to get hoity-toity when you use words like that, that's where too little work has been done in finding out what good. Well, I when people ask me what my subject is, well, my best answer, I guess, is I'm interested in what good food is and what makes it good. It's a question that hasn't been answered very well. It hasn't even been asked very often. So I'm trying to ask it for different foodstuffs, especially, and to answer it.
I noticed that in writing about food, you seem to have the same arsenal of adjectives, I think, that a wine connoisseur has to have in writing about wine. You write about the concentrated flavor of mature carrot, or the bitter and astringent flavor of a walnut. And I wonder whether that writing comes from your taste buds or your thesaurus.
Well, both, actually. It should certainly come from the taste buds. It's an interesting point. First of all, what you may not realize, and I only partly know, but understand more and more, is that wine has been written about so much by so many people in so many countries over such a long period of time that it is not possible to avoid well-worn adjectives with wine. And then what I have come to realize is that the same... Well, you're talking about the same taste, whether you're talking about food or a liquid. And so you need those same adjectives. And the only difference is that they have been used perhaps a little less with food. And in wine, you know, it's so concentrated, especially with French wine. They've been writing about the same wines from the same places in the same way over so long. In food, it isn't quite as true. I mean, the whole thing about wine is, or at least in my mind, I think having just come back from California, even in the minds of California winemakers, is that wine is connected to place. And one of my especial interests in food is the connection of the food to the place. And that's why I've written about foodstuffs and when I have, or the raw materials, and when I have, I've tried to connect them to the extent possible with a particular place and the influence of that place.
I think that's also true for someone just eating a meal, that so much of the context and so much of the people sitting across from you and how you mm-hmm. feel about them, that really does influence the taste of food.
Yeah, absolutely. And even people who may taste wine as a part of their livings would agree with that, even the ones who are assigning those precise numbers to the wines to say just how good they are.
Do you buy most of the food that you eat from local farmers, from local dairy farms?
Well, yes and no. In summer, we have a good-sized garden. To the extent that it's possible, yes, and to the extent that it doesn't take a lot of time and driving, because when you're in the country, you have to get in the car to go almost anywhere. We do have local milk from a small... we have sometimes in the past bought it out of a, you know, baled it out of a farmer's bulk tank, but we now get pasteurized milk that from a farmer who has, I think, 11 Jerseys, and he's commercial, believe it or not, and organic, certified organic.
I'm speaking with Edward Baer, and he is the quarterly The Art of Eating, and he writes, illustrates, and publishes the newsletter from Peacham, Vermont, where he lives. And the newsletter has all sorts of essays on a whole host of food issues, from apples, mustard, wild boar, carrots, bread, you name it. We're going to take a short break and talk some more. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with Edward Baer, and he writes and illustrates and publishes the quarterly newsletter called The Art of Eating. You have in one of your quarterlies an essay about apples entitled Apples, Apples, Apples. And I'd love to have you read just the first two paragraphs.
Okay. Possibly, the best apple I ever ate was a wealthy that I picked one cool, sunny September day some years ago from the last living branch of an old tree in an abandoned farm orchard. But not many orchardists would be impressed by my best claims for a wealthy. Apple people and books usually rate it slightly below the top varieties. Yet the deep roots of the dying tree may have concentrated an exceptional store of energy into the final display of fruit. The tree was dead the next year. And if so, the wealthy I ate was far above the usual run. I recall that that was a good year for apples, perhaps especially for wealthy. And it was the kind of fine day on a hilltop that opened the senses, so often one is distracted and doesn't really taste things. And, of course, things remembered are almost always better. Apple flavor is a complicated, contentious matter. Almost before you begin to speak about varieties, some orchardists will warn you there is no such thing as a best apple. Even so, variety is the most important factor in apple flavor as it is in other fruits and vegetables, but the tree must be well tended and it must grow in the right soil in a favorable climate. One's opinion as to the best variety is not only a question of preference, but of chance. What apple varieties have you tasted and which were in top form at the time? Was the apple mature or underripe, or settling into a soft, flat decline? Not every apple on the tree ripens at once, and for all of them, a few days or a week makes a difference. One's apple notions vary according to where one has lived or perhaps traveled in apple season. What do you call delicious in an apple? My own count of varieties has been boosted by the many nameless ones I've collected along back roads. Alerted by good-sized windfalls lying in a dusty semicircle at the edge of the road, I pull over, or I tromp through an overgrown field to some beckoning unkempt tree, far from a house and so unclaimed, I hope. Such apples are most often disappointing, but they are an education in the near-infinite diversity of apple flavor.
How do you select your topics?
Good question. I have, in theory, a list of subjects that I'm going through, for the quarters ahead or the year or two ahead. Sometimes, though, it's very pragmatic. It's something that I can research in the time allowed, and I'm always accumulating information on subjects, accumulating knowledge, and stuffing things into a file or something. If I'm not ready to write it, even though in theory it's on my schedule, I won't. But sometimes it seems more happenstance, and it's the question of having to make a choice because the time is passing.
You have an essay on eating wild boar.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from?
Well, I'm interested in the tastes of wildness, and I like pork a lot, and it, of course, domesticated pigs come from wild boars, and I found a source of wild boar, so I pursued it. It is sort of domesticated wild boar. That is, these boars are fenced in. They roam about, but they're also this fellow feeds them grain because he's afraid that they'll taste too wild, and he won't be able. He sells the meat. He's afraid that he won't be able to sell the meat if it's too forceful.
Do you find if you're writing an article or an essay about wild boar that you eat wild boar sandwiches, wild boar mm-hmm. soup, wild boar salad?
Yes. Exactly.
I mean, you just kind of immerse yourself in this particular taste that you want to write about.
Yeah, and part of it, alas, is pressure of time because you're trying to come to conclusions, and you can't come to conclusions without eating, without tasting, so you tend to concentrate, yes.
Do you ever lose your appetite to the point that, sort of like people get writer's block, you might get kind of taste block?
I don't remember that ever having happened. There might be things I get tired of eating, but no appetite block. No.
That hearty appetite continues.
Yeah, it's genetic. It's inborn. I don't know.
Now, you're working on a quarterly for the next season. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're writing about?
Well, I've written very little about wine before. I once did a long piece on beer. And I'm writing a piece on the Sauvignon Blanc grape. It's a California piece. I'm making some of those connections with wine and the wine vocabulary more closely.
Are you also expanding your geographic horizons by getting out of Peacham, Vermont?
Well, it doesn't hurt. I was so poor during the early years that I was doing this that travel still sort of feels like escape sometimes. But yes, that's definitely true. And I was just in Sonoma County, and I only wish that I could have spent more time driving back roads and knowing it as well as I know Vermont, or somewhat as well.
Did you have people say to you, what are you doing writing this quarterly? It's in black and white. There are no ads inside. Mm-hmm. It has a kind of simple, elegant style to it. Do people still ask you, what are you doing?
They don't ask me what I'm doing. You mean because it's so uncommercial?
Yeah.
A few people, especially businessmen who make a fair amount of money, find it incomprehensible because they don't realize that you can live on much less money than they live on, I guess, and they may not realize that Vermont is a cheaper place to live than many places, and they multiply the number of subscribers times the subscription price, and they look at me quizzically.
Well, you know, I have to confess to you, while we were waiting to get hooked up with you, I took 1,800 times 22
<You see? laughs>
to figure out how much you make a year.
Yeah, well,
it's not much.
Yeah, last year, only because my wife has a decent job and has kindly helped to support me. But this year, I'm doing extremely well, and sold back issues and so on, and the book is coming out, and I think that at the end of the year, when I look at the books, I will say that you know, in terms of in financial terms or in terms of keeping going for as long as I want, I will have made it.
Edward Baer, thank you so much for joining us today on Fresh Air. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Edward Baer, that's B-E-H-R, is the writer and publisher and illustrator of the quarterly newsletter, The Art of Eating, and he does it all from his home in Peacham, Vermont. A collection of his essays will be out early next year from Atlantic Monthly Press. This is Fresh Air.